The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With the all-new Nissan Juke. The coupe crossover by Nissan. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
Niall Breslin, I'm sure better known to a lot of you as Brezzy, has a new podcast on Spotify that brings together two of his areas of great interest, sport and mental health advocacy. It's called Marathon Mind and it launches today. And Niall joins me on the show. Niall, it's good to talk to you.
Thanks. How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad. Talk to me about Marathon Mind. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, it was kind of my podcast, Where's My Mind? I wanted to do something kind of a little bit different within it. And I've always kind of felt the podcast, actually to me, radio and podcasting, audio generally has been the kind of savior throughout the whole lockdown. And I think we're only really scratching the surface of podcasting. And what I wanted to do was try to bring the kind of different platforms together, like social media, like podcasting, at a time when everybody is massively struggling. And the idea was initially to train four people, put a team together of experts to train four people to do a marathon, but kind of train their mind first and then their body, not the other way around. And that was the kind of the initial idea, which led to about 850 applicants to do the marathon. And then we had to whittle that down to four people who we felt we could best help, who had their own kind of challenges and adversities. And I think everybody has at the moment. And we just wanted to get the right people that we knew we could do something special for and help them from psychology, mindfulness, neuroscience, strength and conditioning, the actual marathon training itself, all aspects that you need for endurance training. And it was just a silly idea, and most of my ideas are going to run with them.
So, okay, there's a few issues there I want to ask you about. Training the mind first and then the body. Explain that to me. What do you mean by that?
Well, I've been in endurance sports quite a while at this point, and anyone who's done endurance sport at any level will tell you it starts with the mind. It is the most important part. And we've always believed, I think we've been educated in a way to believe that the mind is just this kind of thing that you can't strengthen. And in the same way the mind can be weakened, it can absolutely be strengthened. So the idea was to kind of initially arm people with the tools to deal with that side of things first through psychology and mindfulness and neuroscience. And then for me, actual endurance racing is kind of a metaphor for life. Like, there's really, really, really horrible parts to racing. There's amazing, incredible, exciting parts. There's kind of boring parts. There's parts where you just want to give up. There's parts where you just, it's amazing. And I think that's a real metaphor for life. Life isn't a straight line. And this pandemic has proven that. It's just been a massive thing that's just knocked us all, flatlined us. And generally, I think what we're aiming to do with the Marathon Mind Project is to train people in the idea that there's going to be more of these, not pandemics, hopefully, but like, as I said, we deal with adversity every single year of our life in some way. And that's aiming what we're trying to do with these four people who've had particularly difficult adversity and challenges in life. And our aim is to teach them the tools to deal with that, but also get other people to come on this journey, even if they don't do the marathon or want to do the marathon or just want to walk it. This isn't about times. If you're looking for sub-3-hour marathons, this is the wrong project.
So is it, without putting too frivolous a label on what you're doing for them, is it about giving them coping mechanisms to deal with, you know, adversity, resilience, problems, whatever happens to be that will come up in the marathon training and will be mirrored in life?
Absolutely, and it's a good way to put it. But also, the point is, Kieran, we often spend most of our time kind of running away from the things we find uncomfortable and things that, you know, that we struggle with. And what we're going to teach throughout this project with, like, Louise, who's our psychologist, you got to go through it. You can't go around it. And that's just the reality of this stuff. And, you know, that's often where most of our suffering comes from as humans, is that we try to outrun this stuff that you can't outrun. And the irony is I'm asking people to stop running from that and start to run towards something else. And, you know, it's also important to point out that with endurance sport generally, there is also this, with general training and mental health, there can be this obsessive nature where people become obsessed with training and it becomes all they see. And we're very much in a position where we recognize that we do not want that to happen here. That is not what this is about. This is, like, most people who do come on this journey with us over the next 9 months mightn't do the marathon. And the idea also is the fact that we've these incredible experts who are giving their time voluntarily to help people and to use their skills and their passion to, at a time when I think people just need a little bit of purpose and focus, and it's a really good time to start. The weather's starting to pick up. Anyone who's trained for marathon in winter knows that it's a grim thing to do.
Stop, yeah. I remember being out in Baldonnell once training for a marathon in March, and in February running in the snow back to my house from Baldonnell. I thought, never again will I do this in the winter. Lunacy.
It is, and even like the cycling. I remember years ago cycling, I was training for triathlon and I went for a winter cycle, and my dad, when I came home, nearly had to cut me out of my cycling gear because I went hypothermic. Why are you doing this? I do not know. And that, the thing was, Karen, was I was quite obsessed at that time, and I was using it to stop dealing with the stuff I should have dealt with. I was kind of using it as a smokescreen, and I'm very aware of that. And that is not what I want to happen here. And that's why we're very adamant that it's the mind that we want to look at first. I truly believe if it's safe for somebody to do it, and their GP and their physio, and they've no long-term injuries, that, you know, the mind will carry anybody. And if I said to you 15 months ago that you were going to go into lockdown, you're going to have to homeschool your kids, you're going to have to panic buy bog roll, you're going to have to do all the stuff we've gone through in the last year, everybody would have said, oh, I couldn't do that. But we did do it. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, as difficult as it's been for us, we're still standing just about. And maybe we're a little bit tougher than we give ourselves credit for. As difficult as it's been, and it's flatlined me. Like, I won't lie to you. I've had days where I just went out to the back garden and screamed. But that's normal. That is normal reaction to what has been an immensely difficult year.
Look, I want to talk to you about the year itself then in a moment. But just back to the people who are going to be competing, maybe is the wrong word given everything you've just told me, but who are going to be taking part with you over the next 9 months. How did you select them, or what can you tell me about them?
The most important part for us with the four individuals was their stories. That's what podcasting is. It's not about, I've always said, it's about stories. And we sat down and read their stories. We didn't look at anything else. Like, it was basically, that was the starting point. But more importantly, is there something we can do as a team to really bring something to their lives? You know, and it was difficult because there was people there who had incredible stories, and they were immensely brave to share them with us. And we said to everyone who didn't get selected that you're still coming with us here. You know, this isn't just, right, we're picking four and that's it. We're making these programs completely available for free to anybody who wants to do it on our social media pages. And the reaction from them, we got some incredible reactions today from people who weren't selected, who said, listen, I wasn't selected, and I was really quite, you know, upset and a bit annoyed. And then I listened to the podcast and I heard the four people that were, and it's just incredible to hear the stories of one girl, Marion, whose husband passed away from cancer at the start of this COVID, and his wish was that she got back exercising, you know, and stuff like that. And Michelle, who'd gone through cancer herself, and then Salem Gallagher, who's struggled with his mental health for years, and then Danny from Cork, whose father and brother in the last 6 years had died by suicide. And as he said in the podcast, he hasn't been able to process that, and who could? And like he said in the podcast today, and it really was the line that knocked me out, was like, he's got an 11-year-old brother and he wants to help him more. How hard it must have been for his brother. So it's those type of stories. And as a team, we felt we could bring some value to them. And especially through things like the grieving process, which is a process. Mm. Having access to a psychologist and, you know, incredible therapeutic support throughout that process does make it easier. And we can allow that. And these are all their stories. And they tell them on their terms, not our terms.
Are there ethical concerns about having people who are, you know, vulnerable, for want of a better word, taking part in something that's going to be, you know, broadcast to a, you know, potentially a huge audience?
You see, that's the thing. I've done this before with Ironmind, where I train four people to do a 70.3 Ironman with their own challenges as well. The first thing you start out when you're doing a project like this is duty of care. It's the first thing you think of in every aspect. You have to. And bringing professionals to the table like Louise and Michael and Dr. Michael Caine and people like that, that's the first thing we think of. So because this is podcasting, this isn't live. If any individual says something that they're not comfortable with, it doesn't go in. We're not in this to, we're in here to keep these people supported, to guide them. And as I said to them before, generally telling your story isn't the difficult part. It's how people react to it. That can be difficult. So in our situation, then you have to really push the aftercare. If people need some aftercare support, but ultimately you're providing four individuals with full access to therapeutic support. And ultimately, if you look at it in Ireland right now, that's one of our biggest problems. There's people who are struggling and can't get that support and don't have that access to that support because we've underfunded our systems for so many years. So in our hands, this is all about communication. As I said to the four individuals, we're not mind readers. This is where you have to learn to trust us, and we communicate and hopefully inspire other people who might be in a difficult spot to find ways out and find ways, tangible ways out, ways that we're not just theorizing here and we're not just creating this kind of toxic positivity that you sometimes see. This is going to be tough stuff to hear for people, but we can't outrun that stuff anymore. And a lot of people are struggling right now, and maybe they need to hear the fact that there is ways out. There's ways we can support them.
So, you know, you mentioned the amount of huge amount of applicants, and a lot of them maybe annoyed they didn't get picked, and then relieved that they could follow along and they could still engage, and there was something they could still take from it. From people listening today who maybe didn't hear the initial call out, and this is the first time they're hearing about it, you know, is this something that other people can follow?
Absolutely. Like, honest to God, more than welcome. And it's I keep saying this, it's not about the actual marathon itself. It's the journey we're going to bring them over 9 months. Like, we have like Rob Heffernan, world champion, as our marathon coach. Colin Griffin, who's an Olympian, as our strength and condition and sports scientist. We have, you know, Michael Caine as our neuroscientist. Louise Carroll as our psychologist. Sharon Madigan, who's the head of performance nutrition for Sport Ireland and Olympic Games, is our nutritionist. So we've an incredible, like, we have a team you couldn't get. And everyone's more than welcome to join these. We're going to be putting up all the programs and all the support on our social media page, which is on Instagram and Facebook. And it's just Marathon Mind Official. So the training starts next Monday, the 8th of March. But for our context, listen to the Where's My Mind podcast today to show you what it's going to be. And in about 2 or 3 months, we'll be announcing where the marathon is. And my aim as well with the podcast, our podcast is listened to all over the world. And in my weird head, I have people doing this marathon in their hometown in 9 months' time, two bollards, and people out supporting them. You know, we don't know if Dublin Marathon or these big marathons are going to happen this year, and we have no control over that. But what we do control is what we do and how we do it. And anybody can do this marathon. You don't need the 30, 40,000 people in a big, you know, in Dublin City. Yeah. You can do it in your village, your town, supported by your family and your loved ones. And I think right now, after the year we've had, kind of keeping your eye on what you do control is the most important part. But there will be details of the actual marathon itself in the next, maybe, I think, about 2 months.
You mentioned the year we've had, like, either through accident or design, the timing is fortuitous for this. I mean, there'll be a lot of people listening, I'm struck, who to describe it as a service, maybe, is that an exaggeration? But they will want something like this to focus on.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I've been working in this space for nearly 8 years now. I work with my peers and colleagues in the area, and people and psychologists and therapists who are worried now, concerned. And we've seen all the news, and we've seen people worried about the mental health of the nation and where it's at. And I am too. I really am. And I feel that we have to do something about it, you know, because right now we know that our systems aren't strong enough to support the need that's going to be there. And especially young people. I think young people are incredibly adaptive. They'll adapt in and they'll adapt out. But there will be issues here. And we can't think they're not coming. You know, we know that now. I'm sure you've got friends and family who are just absolutely hitting walls. So with this idea, this isn't about solving that in any way, but it's something. And we don't know. We don't have all the answers. But one thing I do know is we can't just kind of go on here and pretend nothing is happening. This is tough stuff here, and I'm really worried about what's going on. And yeah, I think we've radio ads and we have some sound bites and politicians, but we've, for generations, and this isn't blaming any particular, you know, political party, because for generations, well, I suppose it has been Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, we've massively underfunded mental health. We're still only spending 6% of our health budget on mental health. That was always going to come back on us. And now we're in a position where people need help and they need support. And some people just need a little bit of a pickup. And some people need more support. And I just hope we can figure out a way of getting it for them. And this is just a small part of it. I've done a few things throughout the lockdown to try and do my best to see if I can pick up anyone. But I'm only human as well. I'm flatlining at times. You know, I'm 12 months at home now, and as much as it's been great, it's not really something you want to do at 40 years of age, to be living with your parents, you know what I mean?
How have you coped when you've, you know, flatlined or hit the wall over the last 12 months?
I've done well because I have, I suppose, a toolkit. But the one thing I did do very early is to allow myself to feel a bit bad or feel a bit low and allow myself to hit walls, because that's normal. That's a normal reaction to this. And the one thing we have to be careful of is people who kind of almost gaslight the idea that we shouldn't be feeling this. We should be feeling this way. Our brains are only doing their job. They're overwhelmed, they're scared, they're fearful. And if there's uncertainty, there's communication coming left, right, and center that isn't making sense half the time. And when there's bad communication, you leave gaps. And with bad communication, people will fill in those gaps. And that's what creates the uncertainty. So all of this stuff has been difficult. And for me personally, I've been lucky that I've been able to cope with most of it. And I've had my coping strategies like walking, jogging, getting into cold water, years and years of therapy, you know, and understanding that it's okay that I feel a little bit broken at times. And that's just part of this process. But it isn't going to be. And the one thing I will say, Karen, it's really important to say this, because a lot of people are seeing this 12 months or 10, whatever it was, as a lost year. I don't view it like that. I see it as a year where you've built an incredible lived experience that will build something within you to allow you to deal with the other adversities that will come in your life. Because that's what I said, life isn't a straight line. So as tough as this has been, nobody wanted it. But you have built something. I hate the word resilience because it kind of feels a bit binary. But I like the word kind of psychological flexibility. That's what we built throughout this 12 months. And I think our kids probably built it too. And some people might need a little bit extra support and help, but I really don't see it as a lost 12 months.
Do you worry about people when you talk about gaps in information and people then try to fill those gaps themselves, that it gets filled, I suppose, either with more anxiety and stress and, you know, ultimately depression, or even it gets filled with misinformation when the information isn't there. Like we saw that at the weekend, and I'm not talking about a fellow letting off a firework into a guard's face, but I'm talking about the other people, you know, who go on these marches, who just feel like, you know, that they've fallen between two stools. You know what I mean? That they're no longer represented, and their needs, whether that be economic or their mental health needs, are not being met.
I mean, it's a really good point. And I think the point also is, you know, at the end of the day, our politicians in many positions are doing their best. They're trying. But the one thing that hasn't been good is communication has been poor. And communication is crucial at this level in a pandemic. And nobody expects anybody in politics to get everything right. How could you in this mess that we're in? But I think we've created this kind of vacuum that if they don't get something right, that they're afraid to say it. And they have to say something else. Or I know that's politics, and everyone keeps saying that to me, but this is a pandemic. Can we not just let that go for, you know, and stop playing this kind of stuff? But I think that's what happens when you've misinformation coming from at leadership level. How can you expect the rest of society to not get caught up in misinformation? Because that's what leaders are meant to do. They're meant to set those kind of standards. And they haven't been good. And I mean, as I said, I think the politicians, they're humans too. I'm sure they're wrecked at this point. I'm sure they're completely over this mess. They went from Brexit into this, you know. And I worry about the communication. And what happens with misinformation, as I said, is you fill in the gaps, you create uncertainty. And the biggest fuel of anxiety is uncertainty. And that is a problem right now. People don't know, like my industry, for example, first to close will be the last to open. We don't know what's going on. Like, you know, I'm looking at my peers and colleagues, and it's not just financial. They've lost their sense of purpose. They've lost their friends. And I really sincerely worry for them. I worry where they're going, what they're going to do. Are we going to have an industry to come back to? And they're not really being communicated to. And I just feel that is the one thing after all this is over and we're debriefing that we can go, surely we can do better when it comes to communication.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't want to wrap things. I don't want to say on a downbeat note, because it's realistic and it's important. But I do want to bring things back to the podcast before I let you go. Are you running the marathon yourself at the end?
I am. My aim is to be the last one behind them to get them over the line.
Oh, yeah, the Lantern Rouge, is it?
Yeah, and it also gives me an excuse to run really slowly, because I have to be straight up with you, the worst runner you've ever seen. I'm slow. I'm lethargic. I am about as great. As my mum says, it looks like I was shot in the arse with a sedative dart when I'm running.
I saw you run. I saw you running in a tie, in tri-a-thai a couple of years ago. That thought was nowhere near my mind.
Come on,
graceful as a swan.
Yeah, but that's definitely not something I've ever heard. I'm putting the bike.
The swan running and a graceful as a gazelle in the water.
Yeah, there you go. I'll take that.
Listen, Niall, it's a pleasure to speak to you as always.
Thanks a million. Take care of yourself.